Bonjour, hi, I'm Pascal Auclair. I hope this talk supports you in your practice. J'espère que cet enseignement vous sera aidant. If you'd like to support my teaching, you can use the donate button underneath my picture on Dharma Seed. Vous pouvez me soutenir en cliquant sur le bouton sous ma photo. Your support is greatly appreciated. Merci.
Have you been able to explore this feeling tone a little bit today? Has it been kind of on your mind or showing up? Pleasure, displeasure, the kind of absence of it? Yeah? It's an interesting field of exploration, no? Have you seen it, it's a dynamic nature? It's changing nature? We're like, no, it's been blissful since you talked about it in an increasing way, in an ever-increasing way. Or, no, it's been downhill. Yeah, so it's changing, yeah? Sometimes it's maybe in a sensation. The second after, it's a thought that suddenly, you know, brings a displeasure or pleasure, relief. Neutrality, so it keeps moving. It's a really rich field. I remember reading maybe a decade ago a biography, I think it was the biography of Ajahn Mun, and in there he's I think he's describing the practice of somebody else that he another a monk that he talks about, and it's kind of vague, or maybe I'm not going to be exact, but I'm in the ballpark. He describes kind of saying this guy, you know, like at some point, very far in his practice, decided he would like really track Vedana, really track feeling tone, like really get into it, you know. Okay, that's my lab, you know, that's what I'm going to research. And he said, he described like his mind being so sharp, so attentive, like so not, you know, the mind gathered instead of what we get to experience a lot, the mind scattered, you know, thinking about that, about this, about that. Am I going to get there? Oh my God, okay, I'm going to start over again. Yeah, but still I need to plan next week, and oh, if I could get something out of this retreat, you know, so it's kind of like all over the place. And it takes time to actually gather the mind so it stays with interest on the object, on what's happening. Even like kind of that vertical thing that was mentioned, you know, staying here in that field of the now. So this person had done that, had gathered the mind enough to like put their laser-like attention. We're not there yet. We're more like disco ball attention. But this guy put this laser-like attention on Vedana. And Ajahn Mun describes, you know, like within 2 weeks, he had seen through it so deeply, so clearly, the unstable, conditional nature of pleasure and displeasure, how it moves due to condition in an unpersonal way. It's not about me. It's not against me. You know, it's not. It just does what it does. He had seen it so well that his mind opened up completely, let go completely of any tendency to cling to pleasure as mine, etc. So an opening like this. What freedom! What freedom! So just that field of exploration. The Buddha compares, I like a series of images that the Buddha uses. If you've hung out with me a little bit, you know these images, I would think, because I'm not sure that I've ever taught a retreat without bringing these images. Anyway, the one the Buddha uses for the feeling tone is the image of the bubble. And he says, imagine in the fall, when there's rain falling, and rain drops fall on the little puddles of water. How when one drop falls in a puddle, it creates tiny little bubbles for a second. Have you seen this when you were a kid watching raindrops in puddles? Like a rain drops and there's one, two, three little tiny little bubbles that at the surface of the water, and they last a second. And he's saying, Vedana, feeling tone is like this, is like a bubble. And that, you know, really burst your bubble. Because we tend to, you know, that might be a value we have. You know, we want things to be comfortable, to be fun, to be pleasant. And a life well lived would be a series of this, you know. And that makes for a stressful life. Because if you're invested in things being pleasant, it means you or we are going to fear and despise displeasure. And it means a lot of frustration, you know. I have a friend who works at Whistler Ski Center, and it's just an incredibly beautiful place where you can ski. You know, it's holiday leisure, play. You know, and she says, you know, like people are so angry. You know, especially white men, entitled white men. Worth looking into it. You know, like they have it all, you know, and they wait for a few minutes to get on the chairlift, or you know, there's a little something and they'll get in a rage, you know, and I think this is related to that, you know, like I want a series of pleasure that align, and if I don't get it, you're gonna hear about it, you know. Or so it's this, like, thinking it's reliable, thinking it should be stable, at least for me. I don't know for the rest of the world, but for me it should be, you know. And it should be mine. It's my pleasure, you know. Don't touch my pleasure. Don't mess with my pleasure. You know? And so here we have the chance to actually look at this a little closer and come closer to this and see how it's unreliable. It's called these, that the pleasure and displeasure are part of what we call the vicissitude that you might have heard, the winds, the eight winds. The wind of pleasure comes with the wind of displeasure. It's not possible in this life to have only the wind blowing that way. It's not the nature of life. And in the same way, what the exactly. Remove this from me. So the other wind is the wind of success and failure, if you put it in this way. The wind of praises and blame. The winds of you know, what forms and what falls apart, you know, you could say things like this. These are what the world is made of, and through our spiritual practice, we can actually start to learn how to relate to this, how to be in relationship, and maybe understand that our happiness relies more on how we're going to meet these than having everything blowing only in one direction, which is not going to happen. And so another bad news on the spiritual path, there's many. And so here in this study of the feeling tone that we might have picked up today or might pick up later along the way or might never pick it up in this way, maybe our Dharma path, our Dharma doors will not be that one. But still, it's good to mention it. And that's coming closer to this. We can learn to work with the appearance of pleasure, the disappearance of it. a very rich field, actually, in the kind of the wheel of suffering. That's kind of a, how would you call it, like an important hinge, an important bit there. Mm-hmm. Because when you have senses, there is contact. You know, when you have these six doors and windows open, you'll hear stuff, you'll see stuff, you'll feel stuff, you'll have emotions, you'll think stuff, you know. There's going to be stimulation. Some things will be felt as pleasant, unpleasant. And so when there is sensitivity, there is contact. When there is contact, there is feeling tone. When there is feeling tone, grasping can happen, clinging can happen. I like, I don't like, I want to get rid of, it shouldn't happen, I, you know, it's mine, let's get more of this. This is the kind of hinge point here. The feeling tone is the condition for clinging. It doesn't have to be, but it often is. And that's why we want to insert in there discernment, attention first maybe, and discernment, wisdom, so that we can maybe have the choice to, instead of like something down, there's a verb down, clamp down, or down, like this, on things, to notice, oh, unpleasant, unpleasant, whoa, let me feel this, let me feel this. And this alchemy, play, possibility, potential, how could something that would very naturally lead to clinging, opinion, getting all worked up in some ways, you know, or fearful, or etc., how could this lead to peace, balance, calm, creativity, fluidity of mind instead of rigidity? But it was not supposed to be like this. How could that lead to fluidity, to adaptability, to response? Creativity is an interesting research here, because it's possible, but not easy, but possible. And so that's partly what we're doing here. We're seeing, like, how can I make space for this? How can I play with that? How can I, what's the response here? Could tenderness be a good way to meet this, instead of like collapsing, which makes total sense, or charging, you know, which also is a possible answer, reaction. And one other thing that I wanted to share about Vedana, we could have done the whole week just on this, it's so rich, the whole month, year, on that particular aspect of our human experience. But I wanted to name one other aspect of it that can might interest you for research later. Sometimes this feeling tone, this valence, is divided, as you've seen today, in three. So it's divided into pleasurable, neutral, unpleasurable, or disagreeable, or unpleasant. Yeah. And 1, 2, 3, but we can imagine easily a kind of a range, you know, a spectrum. Oh, slightly pleasant, oh, very pleasant, whoa, you know, like this. You know, you can move along that line. And sometimes, you know, in the teaching, what the Buddha did was also to, there's many ways to present it, but one way is you divide these three in two categories. It makes six. Hold on, no, we're going to get there, you'll see. So the Buddha says something like, or I'll say it in my words, so there's some feeling tones that are pleasant, neutral, or unpleasant, of the entangling kind. And there is some feeling tones that we feel that are pleasant, neutral, or unpleasant, that are of the liberating type. So sometimes it could be presented as, maybe entangling or spiritual. So some of these feeling tones lead to more suffering. And some of these feeling tones, even the unpleasant, might lead to less suffering. That is interesting, no? Because my thought around this is that sometimes there's a kind of spiritual path that is might be presented where it should be pleasurable the whole all along. You know, you get the magazine, you know, of course, the white, young, able-bodied woman on top with her pashmina. You know, she's happy. She's having a great time. She has the right bottle of water, the right mat. Everything's right about her. She has long hair, of course. And it's all pleasure from beginning to end, you know. Until she leaves the photo shoot, get on the actual mat, and start suffering. And she's very surprised, like, what's going on, you know? I signed up for a series of pleasure, you know? We're in Bali, we made it, you know, we're in the most beautiful center, you know? Why do I feel like shit? I'm off the path. Get me back on the pleasure path. And it's not exactly like that. And so, and we're finding this out, we're clarifying this here. And so the Buddha seems to talk about this, that there's different, not all pleasures are equal. So think of the pleasure of hating somebody. Sometimes hating somebody is really stressful, it's hard, it's not pleasant at all. But there might be moments where detestation, whatever, if that works, you know, could be pretty fun, no? Like, I hate this person so much, it feels so great, you know, and I'm gonna let myself have it. I know I'm on a retreat, but still, I'm certainly gonna take 2 minutes to hate them. I'll go back to your breath. Give me a minute here. And so there might be something like other things like this that are pleasurable but not helpful along the way, not healing, not helpful for relationship, not helpful for well-being and discernment, wisdom. Discernment is to be able to recognize this. Ah, this is a cheap kind of pleasure or dangerous kind of pleasure. It's not for my benefit. It's not for the benefit of my relationships. And this is what wisdom is the capacity to recognize to which kind of pile it belongs. Is it in the helpful pile or the unhelpful pile? And so if it's in the helpful pile, I'll nourish it, I'll cultivate it, I'll go there. And if I'm aware that it's in the unhelpful pile, then I'll shy away from it. I'll be aware of the danger. I'll maybe be shaken by the presence of this inside of me, and I want to feed this, to indulge, or to just keep going, you know, with this. And so with pleasure, it's like this. There's different kinds of pleasure, and in our research we can find this out, you know. The pleasure of being right, you know, I'm so right, they're all so wrong, you know. Maybe it's good. Maybe it has a cost. Maybe it's limited. And more refined like this, we can find some of the pleasure that also spring from inside are different than the pleasure that comes from sense contact, you know, like good food, pizza, chips, beer. You know, there's pleasure attached to it, but it's dependent. You know, it has to be cooked right. It has to come at the right time. There's a lot of things that makes it unstable and maybe not so available, you know. Shaky, very shaky. And there's other kinds of joy. Contentment tends to be more available when you've developed this because it doesn't need so much. You know, just being here, a step, an in-breath, or not breath, okay. You know. Just this is another kind of pleasure. And talk about, climate disruption, climate change, climate crisis, you know, the importance of having these reflections. What kind of pleasure? The pleasure of accumulation, of owning, is a pleasure that is pretty dangerous for the next generations, maybe, you know. And is there something else, another kind of pleasure that I can... If I'm going to have to let go of that pleasure, maybe, you know, it's good that I develop another source of pleasure that is more sustainable for my well-being, the well-being of the planet, and those who will come. And so that research, that spiritual research that we're doing is really important related to that also. So I want to go through the three different kinds of feeling tone, just to give us a little, you know, matter for reflection, maybe for investigation. And so if we think now, neutral feeling tone, so the two kinds, one that would be unword leading and one that would be entangling, that's really interesting to consider. What could that be? And so there's a kind of neutrality that it's not like because it can be neutrality because there's not much happening, because it's beige, you know, because it doesn't have the object, doesn't have much features that stand out, you know, that might make it be experienced as neutral. Do you recognize this? You know, silence could sometimes be experienced as neutral. You know, there's not so many features to it, unless it's received differently, you know. And at any moment, different people will have a different feeling tone in relationship to the same object. So if I put here a bone with some flesh on it, you know, maybe for many of us it will be an unpleasant experience, right? But if a dog comes in, you know, the feeling tone will be very different. Like, oh my Lord, yes, love retreat. So it's different depending on culture, situation, etc. You know. So the neutrality could be coming because the object has not many features to it that stand out for us, so we could easily miss it, which is what human being tends to do. One of the tendencies when there's a neutral feeling tone is we don't notice, we don't care, we don't register the thing, you know. And so some people in society described as being perceived as neutral by others. That's ageism, racism. There might be some people that some of us. I've learned through maybe schooling, through white supremacy, to see as dangerous. So as soon as we see a person with that skin color, maybe we think there's a danger. You know, there's a threat. There's something wrong. There's a, you know, and yeah. And other people describe that they're perceived as neutral. So they're erased. They're not noticed, and it could be. Because of cultural heritage. I have a friend who has an Asian heritage, and he says, when I walk on the street, I can see people will move a little bit when somebody's coming their way, and when I'm coming, they don't move. Like I don't exist, because I'm a shorter Asian man. And white people don't see me. I don't exist for them. They don't register me. It's powerful, no? It's really powerful, this thing about feeling tone, what it does. So it can erase a population, it can erase folks. We've heard this from aging folks, women amongst others, that they're not feel not seen anymore, not exist. And so that's something we can become aware of. It's not solid, it's not permanent. It's bring a little awareness in the field, and suddenly, whoops, somebody can appear as a sensitive human being instead of a threat, you know. And things can change. Insert a little mindfulness in there, and suddenly things can vibrate in a different way. So this is a kind of neutrality that is detrimental that I just described, no? It's neutral, but it actually has an effect on the experience of beings in society. Another kind of neutral is the neutral that comes from inside, very, very different. The spiritual neutral, one of them, is what we call equanimity. So imagine there's a very charged situation between groups, nations, etc., and a really good mediator comes. I don't know so much about this. It's just my imagination. I imagine a mediator coming and bringing neutrality where it's charged, you know, and bringing an interest, listening, what's happening for you? What's happening for you? What are your needs? Ah, I hear this. Bringing neutrality in the field. And maybe the field can get the neutrality, gain some benefit from the neutrality. Do you see what I mean? The same thing can happen from inside. Equanimity does that. There might be a really charged situation, like the bell is not ringing in the hall. Very charged, epic situation. And with the help of neutral, maybe neutral, felt as neutral qualities such as equanimity or patience, they don't have much feature. They're not like joy or rage, you know. Equanimity has much less features in this way. It's a little bit more transparent. And it comes in and it just allows for the piercing sensation in the knee to be felt. And instead of the reactivity, it's opposite. When is it going to finish? So the equanimity that we're developing as we're walking here, sitting, you know, being mindful in line, eating, it doesn't look like it. It's quite neutral, maybe transparent, but we are developing the capacity to be separated a little bit from what we want, you know. Maybe there's a little bit more sounds than I would like in the hall, or I'm not there yet at the salad bar, you know. And yet I'm able to feel the body, feel the breath, notice the space, rejoice for those who have their meal already, etc. You know? And in this way I'm building that equanimity, that capacity to be separated from what I want. Or by noticing that things change, you know, disappear. Like, so there's something beautiful and I notice, whoops, that taste is gone. Can that be okay, or do I have to get the recipe, or, you know, think about it? How am I going to make it at home, like, to make it endure, you know? I can actually let it go. Oh, this is gone now, you know? And so that, this is a kind of neutrality. It's not a neutrality that is flat. It's a nourishing neutrality. It's a healing neutrality. It's a revealing neutrality. It's onward leading. That's one of the English expressions of that. And so here, we are doing that exploration. But now I'm putting words into this, but we're doing this in a much better way. We're doing this in a felt way so that we'll experience this. And the mind will recognize the value of that kind of attitude or quality. So we won't have to think about it. Oh, I like equanimity. It's not like this. It's going to be at a different level, at the felt level. So we're going to experience this. We're going to go back home, and maybe it's even going to be hard to put it in words, but we're going to have inner references of that starting to kind of bloom or peek out. Okay, shall I do a little of the unpleasant entangling and unpleasant liberating? So the unpleasant entangling, I think it's kind of obvious, like distress, despair, you know, they're really, many of the afflictive emotions are really hard to feel, and they don't make my life better. You know, they don't lead onward. So it's very clear. Or if there's an unpleasant experience and I hate it on top of it, it you know, the hate that I add to it that might be unpleasant doesn't, is not onward leading, it's not liberating. It rather kind of multiplies. So there's pain in the body plus the fear and hate, multiplied by the fear and hate. Yeah. So this we know pretty well, you know, the unpleasant that leads to more unpleasant. That's a path that we often take, you know. Something unpleasant happens, and I add a lot of opinions and resentment and blame to it. It's all more unpleasant. I'm piling it up. It's very natural that we would do this because we don't know otherwise, you know. So, and, you know, so we do this. We know that. The unpleasant that leads to more unpleasant. Sometimes we might think that going on retreat is the unpleasant that leads to more unpleasant. You're like, I'm sitting here, I suffer, and it's not going anywhere. But, you know, somebody like Ajahn Chah would say, this, what we're doing here, is the unpleasant that is leading away from the unpleasant. Because we learn, maybe it's painful to sit for that more many minutes, but we learn to stabilize the mind when it's meeting that kind of wind, you know, to stabilize the mind. So, like this, you know, I'll be able to be with, you know, some of my family members because I've been with the pain in the neck. I'm joking. I know how to stay present with integrity, with care, you know, while it's not going my way, you know, because I've practiced this on the cushion, on retreat. Another kind of unpleasant that is onward leading is often used as an example. I think it's a good one. It's kind of anticipatory fear or anticipatory shame. So you're about to do something hurtful and it feels horrible. Oh my God, if I say this, you know, I might destroy their ego, you know, or hurt this person that I care about or regret it, you know. And so there's something just before I'm about to do, it doesn't feel, the body is informing me. Ugh. The heart goes like this, something at the skin, you know, like integrity, it lives here, you know, and here and here and here, like here, you know. And there's like suddenly goosebumps, you know, at the idea that I could do this and it could have an impact on my relationships. That's not pleasant and very welcome, you know, because it's going to inform me that it's not pleasant and it's spiritual. So just to break the idea that if it's spiritual, it should be pleasant. Not at all, you know. At least not in this case, where it's a help, it's an ally on my side, you know, that is like, hey, you know, think twice. Do you really want to do this? Do you really want to say this? What is this going to have as an impact for yourself later? So this is the feeling tone divided in six. Onward leading or entangling. And maybe I'll add in my own kind of exploration about this, the way I see it in practice, to me that is really obvious, that I can feel that very clearly, is that if there is something unpleasant happening, and I remember that there's something that I can learn from this, or that it can be developed, or there's an opportunity for listening or integrity or respect. You know, it's not how I want things to go, but it's an opportunity to actually try to find resolve, you know, to flexibility of mind, or to actually set boundaries in a way that is not abusive but clear, you know. And so to me, this is an unpleasant situation, unpleasant feeling tone that has a liberating potential. If there's a recognition that this can be a moment of practice then something good can come out of this. So it can be unpleasant and onward leading. And in the same way, if there's something pleasant happening at the sense doors, and I'm able to become attentive and notice the ephemeral nature of that pleasure, then it will help me avoid clinging. You know, if I'm able to recognize, oh, this is really beautiful, let me see if I can allow it to move through, to be felt, to be experienced, be nourishing, be opening, be felt, you know, and let go of. If I can do this, then I'm, practicing, it's onward leading. And not only this, it seems like it's the enjoyable thing is more enjoyable than if I'm already busy trying to keep or get more of or get stressed or fearful that I'm going to lose. If I'm able to let it do its thing, then I really will be able to feel the real enjoyment, the real gratification that might be in the, you know, a meeting. Let's say we meet and like, oh, we have to do this again, you know. Like, let's be there for this. And can we let it also dissolve? And can it be onward leading, meaning lead to peace, to calm, to ease? This is practice to me. This is the art I do want to develop. Yeah. And it becomes very applicable to me, for example, reading news. So I read news on my telephone a couple of times a day. I'll open the newspaper. You know? And like this can be unpleasant, leading to more unpleasant, entangling, you know. But if it's spiritual practice, then it's what am I learning about us and how am I going to hold this? How can this lead to care, to compassion, to calm, to clarity instead of agitation, which the door is wide open for that, you know? But how can I just use this in a way that will make me consider the experience of others, the other, us, you know? And I'll take just a moment now to contextualize. It might be of interest to you or not, but just to contextualize the feeling tone in the map of practice, where it is. And many of you, I think, will know this, or maybe it's a good review, or maybe you'll learn a little something that might be of interest. It's more conceptual. It's a way to understand the kind of the map of practice. And so there's something that is called... So, mindfulness, attention, paying attention, offering generous attention, coming close to, noticing, feeling, experiencing, discovering or rediscovering something, mindfulness. When the Buddha talks about mindfulness, often he talks about the four foundations of mindfulness. So there's mindfulness as what it is, what kind of quality it is, and there's also what defines mindfulness is what it lands on, what it's interested by. And so there's a teaching. What we're doing here is based on this teaching, on the four foundations of mindfulness. Foundations meaning what attention rests on, what it lands on. That's the foundation of mindfulness, where it lands if you're interested in peace, freedom, healing. I'm talking on a spiritual kind of level, healing, or psychological level, healing. So we could think, let's take this as a hypothesis, that there's always attention. Always attention. Attention is always given to something. And for me, before I learned about meditation and the four foundations of mindfulness, my attention was always going to thoughts. Like, kind of by default, it was storytelling, you know, anticipating, rehashing, you know, trying to strategize. Like, this was where the... So give me 20 minutes on a cushion, no problem. I'll be very busy, and there's going to be a lot of attention, and it's going to be given to the story of Pascal, you know. And so with the four foundations of mindfulness, suddenly there seems like somebody comes and say, yeah, you can do that. You can let your attention go in that direction. But maybe, you know, maybe... Will there be resolve? Will there be freedom at the end of that? You know, running in circles in the ancient city streets. You know. Something else you could do with your attention could be to place it in the body. So we've heard this already. So that's often called the first foundation of mindfulness. The attention to the physical world through the sense, the five sense doors. And so this is the first foundation. We've been invited to do this here. The first foundation is the breath. The posture, sitting, lying down, walking, the activities, eating, opening a door, putting on a jacket. So that's very much what we're doing here. First foundation of mindfulness. And so the invitation is, it's worth putting attention on this. And when I started practicing, it was very surprising to me, because I was in a period of my life where it was very, very stressful. Things were falling apart in a way that I hadn't seen come. And I was experiencing a lot of fear, a lot of confusion, a lot of shame. Things were really going bad. And in all my panic and obsession, suddenly somebody's saying to me, maybe you could put your attention at your nostril. Maybe. Like, it's not clear that it's going to help. But I'm desperate enough, and I've tried other things. They haven't worked so well, and now I'm really in a mess. So I'm enough in a mess that I'm willing to try it, you know, out of desperation. And that was the, you know, and there was a lot of panic and what's going to happen. And, blah, blah, blah. And there was always this, do you know where you are? Can you hear the sounds of the forest? Can you see the light of the moon? Can you just do a few steps in that direction, then come back? Just there alongside the mid hall, you know. Go outside, walk along the side there. Just walk back and forth and be there with each step. First foundation of mindfulness. It's very, very, very rich. For me, just to ground again, you know, to get out of that field where I was, where getting nowhere. And so first foundation. Second foundation of mindfulness. Second thing that the attention is invited to land on, that is worthy of attention. What is the second foundation? Vedana, feeling tone. So that's the second foundation that the Buddha taught. He said, it's really worth it at any time to be with the breath, to be aware that you're sitting. Because often you forget, you think, oh, the rest of my life, and if that happened, can you... Just know you're sitting. Just know you're sitting and keep that awareness alive. Know you're sitting and keep knowing you're sitting. First foundation. Then another invitation. If something pleasant happens, tune in. Tune in because you'll discover how you relate to that. And it's probably a little fucked up. This is my translation of Pali. You know, but pay attention how you pay attention and you'll discover how you hold it, and you'll discover what pleasure does, how it arises and passes. And that will be very informative for you to discover that it arises and passes. And so that's the second foundation. So what I'm doing now is I'm placing it inside the map of the four foundations, this teaching on the feeling tone. And there's a third foundation. Of course there's four. What is the third foundation? Many of you know and you're like, okay, I'm just going to be patient. I'm going to let you do your thing. Thank you so much. But you could say, the third foundation is mind states, mind, awareness of mind, awareness of moods, awareness of qualities of mind, the scattered mind, the gathered mind, the heavy heart, the light heart, the broken heart, the spacious heart, the rigid mind, the flexible mind, the playful mind, the waiting for something mind, the grasping mind, the clinging mind, the desiring mind, the hating mind. So that's the first area that is, the third area that is worthy of attention in the teaching. Up in this retreat, it's also very classic, I taught it second. I brought the body, then I brought the mind states, and I'm bringing the feeling tone. In the classic teaching, or that night, the Buddha seemed to have put it second, the feeling tone, and third, the mind state. But just so we know, so these are the things that I'm invited to know, and in real time, because sometimes we're like, I want to put a lot of attention on the mind state I would like to feel. I would like to feel confident. I would like to feel joyful. I have a lot of attention to put to this. And it's like, no, not exactly. It's just a little different. It's the presently arisen mind state that we are interested in, the one that is in operation right now, to see how it behaves, to notice how it changes maybe, or how it wasn't chosen. It just landed there due to conditions, how it's not exactly mine, but certainly visiting, or how it's onward leading or detrimental. So that's the third foundation. And there's a fourth one. And that's where it gets complicated. It was all like kind of like linear, like body, feeling tone, mind state. Give me a nice little bundle. Simple little bundle. And it's a little different. It's this fourth area of attention has different components to it. Maybe I'll present it in a way that I think is good and that will keep some of the simplicity going. So awareness of body, physicality, materiality. Awareness of tonality, pleasure, displeasure, neutrality. Awareness of the mind state. And you remember how the Buddha in the mind state is very simple. When the mind is concentrated, know it's concentrated. It's very simple. It's not saying when the mind is scattered, it shouldn't be. You know, it's just saying this. It's like, no, get to know the scattered mind. Get to know the agitated mind. Get to know the grumpy mind. Get to know the benevolent mind. Get to know them deeply. You have to actually experience it. Soak in them for a little while. The obsessed mind, yeah. You have to get to know it. Not just spin into it, but get to experience it with some mindfulness. Become aware of what it's doing. Yeah? And so it's just be aware of it. And when we get to the fourth foundation, then it's... I'll present it like this, the art of going from afflictive emotions and mind state towards a beautiful mind state. So we bring our attention not to the body exactly, not to the feeling tone exactly, not just to the state we're in, but how can the afflictive state be accompanied towards something that is more wholesome or helpful, or less distressing. So that's the art of this. So using attention to discover how I can go from greed to letting go. How can I go from hatred to compassion or love? So how can I go from the five hindrances to maybe the factors of awakening? And so that's a really beautiful way to practice. So we can be with the body walking, we can be with the mind state, with pleasure, displeasure. And when there is distress, developing that art, that science, that exploration of what do we do with the Pascal that is discouraged? What do we do? Do we let Pascal produce discouragement? What do we do? What can we bring that could be helpful? Oh, maybe compassion here. Maybe we could move from, you know, dejection to care. Wow. And so we're playing with this here, even if we hadn't named the fourth as part of what we're doing. How could we go from a mind that is just in its ideas about stuff to a mind that actually tunes in to receive the information? Mindfulness, that's what we're doing. We come to a retreat to do exactly that, the fourth movement or foundation. We come to a retreat to learn to be there. Because others have noticed, maybe ourselves too, I have noticed that when there's a little bit more presence, my values become available. When there's not so much presence, my values might be there, might not be there. Respect, honesty, kindness. Maybe I value these things, or I say I do. You know, but when I'm just habitual and reactive, they're not so available. And I notice that when there is a quality of presence, suddenly the creativity maybe that I care about, the flexibility, the mind that can play with things, you know, can admit something and incorporate it and work with it, that when there's mindfulness, there's more of that possibility. And so that's what we're doing here. We're learning to go from a rigid mind, stuck in its ideas and patterns and habits, to a mind that is more, you know, has more potential to it. So first foundation?
Body,
yeah. So the body when it's sitting, walking, moving. In that foundation, there's the four elements. That's practice of the body. There's also, it's rarely taught in the West, but there's the corpse contemplation. So if we happen to run into a dead animal or insect, to actually stop and take it in. That's what happens to bodies, to living beings. You know, it's really can be very powerful to consider this. I was hearing, again, the other day a teaching from Joseph, and he was recommending in a series of practices for lay people, for people in their daily life, he was saying, you know, I recommend taking 3 minutes every day to think about death. You know, to think in whatever way it makes sense to you, to think of, you know, that this folks that I've known that have died, you know, these dear beings. It's very natural, they have. That's what happens. Or to think of generations, you know. There's been how many generations of human beings if we just take these animals, you know? And all of them have died. That's what happens. So he was saying 3 minutes a day to reflect on one's own death. Oh, there will be death for this one. That's the one thing we know. Probably the only thing we know. And we don't know when. But it's true, it's factual. It's going to happen. And as we did a little bit through the elements, oh yeah, one day, you know, this will dry up, the warmth will leave, the wind will leave, there'll be just earth, And so that's the first foundation. The second foundation.
Feeling
tone. Depending on if you're going through what we went through or the official list. Okay. All good answers. So the feeling tone is worthy of our attention. And then, yes, the mind stays. And the fourth one again is? Yeah, the movement from afflictive mind state to beautiful qualities. There's other ways to talk about it, the fourth one, but that's definitely one of them that holds a good presentation of that. So that's what we're playing with. And these things that we'll continue to explore here in the second half of the retreat are the things that we'll find at home also. Mind states, body experiences, feeling tones, and that potential to accompany ourselves or maybe even others from difficult mind states to more easeful ones or helpful ones. Okay. So just let's take a moment here just to see what's there in these foundations. May we be able to notice, as the Buddha instructs us, the change that is happening constantly in the body, the arising of sensation, the passing of sensations, the arising of silence, the passing of silence. May we be able to notice the change in feeling tones, the incredible dynamic nature, pleasure and displeasure and neutrality as it moves through our emotions, our sensations, the different situations we're in. May we be able to notice this in the movements of the heart, expanding, sometimes expansive, contracted. It can change gradually during the day or suddenly. May this understanding of the deeply changing nature of experience be liberating. The dining room is an excellent field of the four foundations. You'll find them there if you look. Okay, thank you. Bon appétit.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.